for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Kipper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culture as PlayStation podcast with over near 60 years playing PlayStation and 15 plus years in that game's media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. Maybe for the foreseeable future, all of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. More support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this position pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturists. Pardon me. Oh. It's a good question though, Max. You're like, you know, oh, Twitter for how much longer? Elon really wants to bury that platform, doesn't he? Which makes me so mad because it's my favorite one.
I think he got exactly out of it what he wanted, which was a platform where he could not be ignored.
That does check out quite a lot.
He's like 100% clearly doing like election interference.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I will give anyone $100 who like signs up to register to vote if they haven't. And he's currently giving away $1 million per day to sign a petition in swing states. Like, that's clearly like election interference, right?
Well, like, coercing
people to like register to vote and sign petitions for money seems to be the definition of like...
I think paying someone to vote for someone is... illegal, but I think rewarding people to sign up to vote. Well, I guess in Australia it's different because we have to, but
I mean, we don't have to, we can just pay the fine and move on.
Yeah, it's like $20 or whatever. It's not, yeah, but no, I would be sad if Twitter goes away because it is the only platform that I use. And all my feeds like, hey, I'm over here on this app and that app and the Threads and the Blue Sky. I'm like, I just like Twitter.
I mean, I've been seeing those for like the last, 3 years?
Yeah. And
no one's using those.
Yeah, and every prick that posted is still around.
Yep.
Yeah. Plus, I'm pretty sure there's got to be some sort of like privacy policy that's restricted by the removal of a block feature.
Who knows?
I don't know. See, I've curated my Twitter to such a skill that like I don't see any of the shit that I don't want to see, which is really great. So everyone's like, oh, Twitter's a cesspool. I'm like, then what the fuck are you doing? Mine's not.
Hmm.
Well, you engage with yours so little, Max, that Twitter gives you notifications about other people's posts.
Yeah, I have no idea what the fuck is going on. Like, I literally suddenly got a notification, and you know how the icons all mean something? Like,
yeah,
the little blue person is someone has followed you, or the little green thing is like it's a repost.
Mm-hmm.
What a fucking purple star! What the fuck is that?
We're giving you a push notification so you open the app.
And the comment is, she won't leave my house. I'm just trying to get to bed. I'm like, I don't know this person. I don't follow this person.
Well, Middleton was part of the, was originally part of the console panel.
Okay. I still don't follow those.
No. So it doesn't explain why you're being recommended to you, but like the proximity makes sense.
And I don't follow any of the people that have commented on the post either.
And you can't see who likes it, so...
So, like, it's fucked.
So good. Speaking of, though, the PAX panel, we talked about it last week, but it is up now on both the podcast feeds and the YouTube channel, which I would hope if you're following us on one or the other, you likely already had seen it in your feed, whether you've watched it or not. That's fine. But it is in your feeds nonetheless. I did listen back to it. My opening is brilliant. Max, brilliant.
It is brilliant. I thoroughly enjoyed that opening.
Yeah, everyone had a really good go, and it was very, very good. Listening back to it, I was very happy with listening back, I was very happy with how it went the second time around. It's absolutely fantastic. But what have you been up to this week, Mix?
I've been trying to help my parents fix their PlayStation because theirs has died.
Oh, no. Well, how so?
It's just decided to not read discs anymore.
Oh, is it a fat or a slim?
Slim.
Just get a replacement. Oh, hang on. That's not easy.
So I'm like, there's some things we can try. So if you go to the PlayStation website, they're like, hey, just boot it up in safe mode and rebuild the database. I'm like, that's weird. Why would you rebuild the database to make the disc drive work? Whatever. We'll do it. Still doesn't work. They're like, would you like to try this option? Restoring factory settings.
No.
But, we don't have the files pre-installed on the hard drive. So you have to download the file yourself, put it on a USB stick, and then plug that bitch in, and then reformat it and reinstall everything yourself. And I'm like, that seems too difficult.
Yeah, that's when you want a complete factory, like factory plus reset, you know, like that's crazy.
It was like too much effort. I said to mum, I'm like, how long ago did you buy it? She's like, we bought it this year. I'm like, cool. Go get a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She's like, can you call them for me? I'm like, sure.
Where did she buy it through?
EB Games.
Oh, okay.
So there should be no problem.
No. I was going to say, you just get the new disc, you just replace the disc drive.
She's like, what do I need to take back in? I'm like, I don't know. Probably just the console. They probably won't.
Yeah, they don't give a shit about the other stuff commonly.
Yeah. I'm like, probably just the console. I'm like, they'll probably plug it in and check it to make sure you're not, you know, trying to pull the wool over their eyes. But for the most part, they'll be like, yep, no worries, and they'll swap it.
Make sure she like fracture resets like to the way when it gets second handed, because it will.
Yeah.
Yeah. She have the PS Plus, put all the saves in the cloud?
I don't think they really care about. I don't think they've got saves.
But their saves, like if they've been playing, you know, what about It Takes Two? They'll play that together. What if they lose that?
They finished it.
Oh, well, they don't care about that one.
They can lose it. It's fine.
There's something they have less concern. But that's were they playing a lot of physical games?
Yeah. So they own like 3 or 4 physical games.
That does not seem enough to break a disc drive.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It just randomly stopped working.
Yeah.
That's like, it worked last time I used the PlayStation. I'm like, when was that? And he's like, I don't know, months ago.
Oh, but I thought they were all up in the business of the PlayStation. Have they
and then Dad got busy. They use it for like Netflix every day, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that doesn't require a disc drive, so.
True. Well, not these days, anyway.
I'm like, oh, have you put it in upside down? They're like, I don't know. What way do the discs go in? I'm like, I don't know. I don't put discs in my console. I'm like, I'm pretty sure the cover faces into the PlayStation. Correct. Itself.
Yeah. If they've been doing this entire time, that would be embarrassing.
Well, they haven't, because they've clearly been playing the games.
Like, yeah.
I've played GT with Dad before. So.
Yeah, that's true. True, true, true. Anything else other than that?
Other than that, no, it's been a pretty quiet week for me. I mean, obviously, we caught up yesterday with you for your house. Woman.
We did. Yeah. So yesterday, at time of recording on Saturday, we had a lovely housewarming at my new place, which was really cool. It was a good afternoon into the evening. It was, you know, from all accounts, it was well reviewed of a shindig, which is lovely. Everyone seemed to have a really good time. The food was dope. My dad did an exceptional job. It was interesting though, like because everyone at the party, you know, is a bit weird, like it was really accepting and really chill. We had a group of my wrestle buddies over one side talking wrestling, group of, you know, other the other side talking fantasy, like LARPing nonsense. And then in the middle was like this mix of us, which was myself and my mate, Plumber, who I've literally not seen in about 10 years. My mate Spratty, who lives in back near my hometown, so I see him once a year maybe. So I spent a lot of time chatting to them. Obviously, chat with you for a little bit, and you were sort of drifting around, but you were more in monitoring child as your little one. Hadley tried to get into sword fights with both my son James and Phoebe's partner's son Hunter. And then on top of that, Ollie, your littlest one, just turned one, also was seen running around with a sword in hand and a sausage roll in the other. He seemed to have a good time.
Yeah, he had a good time. He fucking conked out pretty hard when we got home.
Good, good, good. And Hadley as well?
No, fuck no.
No, but she had a good time though?
Yeah, yeah, she had a good time. She said, I'm surprised she left so easily.
Yeah.
No, there was no arguments or tears.
Well, I think it was because the discussion of, hey, we'll hang out again. Like,
yeah.
And we've always backed it up, I think, is probably the little touch as well. But no, it was a good little shindig, as I said. So then we started early to lay all the kids, and then which then switched it up for us to hang out a little bit later for those that wanted to. But of course, Max did have to head home. Once again, further demonstrating to myself that, like, I am just not good at late nights anymore. I am so exhausted today. Just zonked, which is really good because it allowed me to spend most of the day just sort of chilling out, not doing a whole bunch. Which goes into what have we been playing. Max, now, this really wasn't jumping at you previously. However, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. So we'll touch upon it a little bit here. So you went back to Silent Hill 2 Remake. Big thank you to him over at 5-star for providing us a review code. Has it hooked you yet?
No. So I'm still... I want to say I feel like I'm still fairly early, even though I feel like I put like a fair bit of time into it. So I'm up to what I'm referring to as the Upside Down.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Other World?
Yeah. The trophy pops like, hey, you're in the other world. And I'm like, cool. It's just a fucking inverse of what I was already in. Seems kind of bullshit and lazy in my opinion, but whatever.
But you remember for when it came out in the early 2000s, a little different. It was before Stranger Things, Max.
So the issue I've been having was it is because obviously for the longest time it has always been like you either played one or the other, Silent Hill or Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I played Resident Evil growing up, so I don't have that nostalgic love going back to it. And it's very much, I found it to be very much a product of its time. It's very slow and methodical to begin with. Like I now finally have a firearm, which sucks in my opinion. It's still better than the shitty club that I've got, but you know, a couple of quick shots to the legs and then you smack them in the face with the club to try and preserve as much ammo as I can because I'm assuming I'm going to need it at some point. And then I think you mentioned it last week where you're kind of going out of your way to like look in the nooks and crannies where in a game these days there would definitely be something hidden, but because it was made for the PS1, there is nothing there because they could never put something there.
PS2
was it? So there's nothing there because there never was going to be something there because it could never be there. So I find myself wasting a lot of time, which irks me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the story's kind of starting to unfold, it's slightly pulling me in more, but I still have that hesitancy of like, I don't know if it's going to pull me through enough of the gameplay that I'm currently not really enjoying that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much that I can see where I need to go, but I need to do 10,000 steps before I can get there.
Oh, yeah.
And like, although that's the same in Resident Evil, I found it to be more fun and whimsical in Resident Evil because there was more shit to do in the in-betweens. Whereas like, you know, I'd fight like 10, 20 zombies on the way to get puzzle piece A. But in Silent Hill, I'm spending that time maybe seeing one enemy and most of the time I'm just fucking looking around because I think there's something behind me the whole time because of the incredible audio design of that game.
Mm-hmm.
So although I'm doing stuff, it's very passive as opposed to Resident Evil's more action heavy, I found anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The game's still fine. I will probably see it through. But it's been put on the back burner for something else that I've been playing this week that I can't seem to put down. I've put in 15 hours since I got it Friday afternoon.
And including a whole party in the middle there as well.
Yeah. It's fine. Like it looks good. It plays well. The audio design is absolutely fantastic. But I feel that because I missed it the first time around, it's not hitting as hard this time around because I don't have that pre-existing love for the franchise. It's just me diving in for the first time, and it's just, yeah, I find it to be very dated, even though it looks like fresh and new. It still plays like a PS2 title.
Yeah, and I guess with and a lot of that is kind of a desirable thing for those that do have a fond memory of the original. So they while wanting it to be and feel like the original PS2 version makes complete sense. But comparatively, the improvements here are staggering. Obviously, visual fidelity is a big difference. How it controls difference well, where it was those sort of fixed cameras in Silent Hill 2, except for those when you're heading through streets, you could have it behind you, but it wasn't as free moving as, say, the 3D ones that we have available in the remake. So I myself am quite a bit further than you. I've put about 7-ish hours in, which is interesting because it feels like substantially longer. But I think a lot of that is because the game does have that very alone, very claustrophobic, but lonely. But like, you feel isolated and excluded, you know, as you're wandering through these empty streets and the occasional little creature thing comes up. And, you know, as you get further down, you do get multiple enemies at once, so that kind of switches it up a little bit. But the combat is still very clearly not one of the strongest parts of this game, mostly just because, like, it feels like it's better, but also feels a little bit poo. There's a great video that was put up by James Stephanie Sterling at Jim's, on YouTube, and it was essentially about how the combat in Silent Hill is a bit poo. And I disagree with some of their points, but some were bang on. An example being the creature, the one that looks like two legs crammed together. That monster is designed in this version of the game to sort of pop out of nowhere and give you a bit of a jump scare. But it's entertaining that now, once you realize that's what they're there for, when you enter a room or a hallway or an area, and if you just sort of vigilant and have a quick look around, you'll see them hiding behind like pots, standing behind walls, trying to be all like, you know, sneaky, get smart style up against the wall. Which allows you to sort of get the jump on them a little bit. It just kind of penalizes you from frantically moving through the world and the area rather than like being a bit more particular, I guess, for lack of a better term, a bit more focused. That's fine. But yes, I'm quite a bit further away. I'm just about to wrap up the Brookhaven Hospital, for those of you playing at home or know from previous references. And, like, I'm still really enjoying it because out of all the Silent... Like, I'm a big fan of Silent Hill, always have been. Even when... I believe you were around for at least the Resident Evil 3 review, Max, potentially. Mm-hmm. But 2, I think, was Josh.
Yeah, 2 was Josh.
Yeah. So that was my first... Like, 7 and then 2 was, like, my real first exposure to Resident Evil as a franchise. Like, Silent Hill I always had better access to. But even then, I played a lot of Silent Hill 1 and a lot of Silent Hill 3. So 2 I never owned on my PS2, so I've played it once. So this does feel old, and I'm loving it as if I had played it when I was younger. Like, it's giving me all the vibes and feels of Silent Hill, but not that full familiarity as I've never, you know, completed the game before. I've just given it a good red go. And, like, I've passed that point of me remembering where I was up to so far. Yeah, as you mentioned, we talked about it last week as well, just the incredible sound design. It's just so good. It's brilliant. So, like, for yourself, Max, how are you finding, like... Well, you know, the creature designs and then, of course, Pyramid Head, you know, one of a signature... character from this franchise. does it give you that sense of like foreboding? But in like, because I think they're trying to set up a very similar to, you know, Nemesis in 2 and 3, yeah. But obviously with this released alongside Resident Evil 4, so.
So obviously I'm up to the point where, you know, I've met Pyramid Head for the first time. I'm essentially following it through the Mirror World apartment building. And it's fine. Obviously, it's a very iconic enemy that I've seen in multiple games at this point. You know, it's one of those things that you're like, oh, that's the Silent Hill guy. For the rest of them, the mannequins and the other wankers that are just legs on legs.
Yeah.
You know, they leave some to be desired. Those explosive dickheads also piss me off.
Oh, yeah.
They take forever to explode, and then the gas lingers for so fucking long that you just twiddling your thumbs for a good 5 seconds before you can move on in this already slow-paced game. It kind of just... But I've only seen the two types of enemies plus Pyramid Head, because I'm still pretty early.
Yeah, once you hit the hospital, you'll see the nurses, etc.
Yeah, so for now, they're fine. They're not exactly, you know, you can walk into a room and spot the bad guy pretty much straight away if they're trying to hide.
Yeah.
They're not exactly, you can normally find them in front of, they're normally sitting right in front of fucking healing items that you need. Ready to smack you. Yeah, I think the character design's fine. It's not as, it's more body horror than anything else.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I wouldn't say it's scary per se, but yeah, until I see more, the two that I have run into are kind of blandish.
Yeah, it certainly fits more into the psychological horror.
Yeah.
Sort of space, or psychological thriller, I should say. Because yeah, the main sort of throughput is James as a character and what he's going through in his brain and mentally, and grief and loss and depression and all those experiences. Where Resident Evil doesn't quite tackle that.
Which is still why I think that I am the perfect. but I guess I'll have to play and find out when I get to the end.
Well, that's only if you stop playing this other game, Max. What's the other game you've been playing?
Happen. Well, again, thank you to the team over at Firestar. I am playing Metaphor ReFantazie, which is just incredible.
So the interesting thing is, so they kind of provided a PC code. Like normally where we'll get a console code and we'll share it so we can both play it. And they're like, hey, you got a PC code? I'm like, oh yeah, cool. I got a new PC. That'd be fantastic. I'll play that. I'm like, hey, Max, did you end up picking it up on PlayStation? Because you were going to do some trade deal and get it super cheap.
EB had a trade deal. Was just trade in two games, get it for $39. Yeah. And then I called them and they're like, oh, it doesn't say it, but it has to be PS5 titles or Switch titles. I'm like, I have one.
Well, then why the fuck doesn't it say it?
Yeah. They're like, you can still trade in your older games, but they're worth like sweet fuck all. I'm like, well, that's no good. That's not going to help me at all.
Because like I had a feeling that you're going to love this game, and we're about to experience this as you explain it. So we knew that you would want, pardon me, a physical version of this game if you could get one. So hence the there's a PC code. I'll jump on the PC code. You'll jump on your PS5 copy, and then when you realize that you have no physical games to trade anymore, essentially.
Yeah, because I essentially just don't do physical these days.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, well, in the best to support the person in this show that would give it that would give Metaphor ReFantazio the best review.
We just have to set up the Steam family.
Yeah, you can still do that, I suppose. But yeah, like it was important for me to go, okay, let's give it to you because I think you'll see it through. Not that you'll love it, but you will be able to come at it in a more critical fashion because of your love for Atlas.
An 80-hour JRPG does seem rather daunting for you to play.
It does. But having played the prologue, it did.
Anyway.
Yeah. Having played the prologue for a little while, it did make me go, ooh, maybe this can be a game for both of us.
To be fair, the prologue's like the first 5 hours of the fucking game.
Yeah, I didn't go that far. I put like an hour and a half into it. And I was like, yeah, it looks pretty good. So tell us about it, Max.
So this is from Studio Zero, which is headed by who was the director of Peace Studio, who did Persona 5.
Mm-hmm.
So it's by the old Persona guys. And you can definitely tell that in the way the game is designed and everything like that. But the overarching story for this is it's set in a kingdom called Uchronia. It's like a medieval fantasy world. the prince of the realm has been cursed and the king has been assassinated and there is no one to take up the crown. Essentially, the king, before his dying breath, cast a spell and he's like, hey, there is no one to take the crown. By X date, whoever has the most, like, the best public opinion will win the crown. That's how we're going to do it. Whoever's the best for the rest of humanity and the tribes. So it seems to be this high fantasy political intrigue at the moment. There's lots of factions of like clans of all the different races. They're supposed to all be equal, but you know, there's rampant racism to everywhere. Like, you know, we're the superior clan. We should be the next king. Therefore, we're, you know, you should automatically, you know, bow down to us. So yeah, it's been very interesting. So, as the protagonist, you essentially, you are a former friend of the prince's, and you're, to begin the game, you're first off trying to save the prince. You're like, I'm going to save him from his curse. We know who cursed him. We need to just kill the guy who cursed him. Then the curse will be lifted. Everything's sweet. Turns out he's also in the running for the crown.
Mm.
And one of the shticks of the public opinion thing is the more public opinion you have, you cannot, you can't be killed. Like, you can't, they can't, to avoid the, like, political assassinations of, like, well, he's winning the race, so we'll just kill him off and then he can't win.
Mm-hmm.
So he's protected by the former king's magic. So you're like, you're now like, oh shit, what do we do? How do we get this guy out into the open where we can formally challenge him and save the prince? So I've now entered the race. I'm going to be, or attempt to be, the new king. So yeah, all that fun stuff ensues. So much like Persona, it does have that dated system, or like, not dated, it actually uses dates. So the game progresses day by day. much like Persona, you have tasks that can only be required by X date. So you have to manage your time between, once again, social interactions between you and your allies to strengthen the bonds, to upgrade the new archetypes of is the class system in this game. So they've moved away from like personifying the demons from like Persona or Shin Megami Tensei. You have actual classes that you unlock as you grow your social links with your allies as you progress through the game. You also have the... I think they're called like the Royal Vigors or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially your social stats. So they've got courage, imagination, wisdom. So you can spend your days growing those. Depending on what level they are, you have different interactions with different people. So for instance, some side quests are locked behind, oh, you don't have the imagination for this yet, or we don't think you're courageous enough to go on to this quest, or you're not smart enough to just talk to me and get the information that you need. So you've got to manage your time between not only leveling up for combat, leveling up your social skills, and then leveling up your social links as well. Mm. So it's that micromanagement of, because if you go dungeon diving during the day, you can't do anything at night because you're too tired.
Mm.
But if you do something during the day, you then can't dungeon dive at night. So you could do either like two tasks during the day, so be like a social skill and a social link, or you can do multiple social skills, or you could try and hunt down new, you do bounties, stuff like that, to try and gain money to buy new equipment to strengthen yourself, or you go dungeon diving to level up the your archetypes and your character growth. So it's that fine line balance of like, hey, I've got 6 days left. That gives me a total of 12 options of things that I can do over those 6 days. How am I gonna, like, what's the best way to spend my time?
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fun. Trying to find that balance. it's got the same crazy UI that the Persona games have. So in combat, you've got, you know, skills, attack, items, all that fun stuff. Combat is exactly the same as it was in Persona. So in the overworld, you can attack an enemy, and it'll Force of Combat, and then from there you can go, you do your turn-based combat. It tells you how many turns you get. If you hit a weak or a crit, you'll get an extra turn. And then if you miss, you lose X amount of turn points, which is really cool. The big thing in this is if you are higher level, if you are too high a level compared to the enemy monster in the overworld, you just instantly kill them in the overworld. There's no transitioning to a battle screen. You get the XP items and loot as if you had fought them in the
Is fantastic.
In the actual battle screen. So if you want to farm, you can just reload an area and just smack them in the overworld. You don't have to do that transition phase, that loading screen, and go into an actual combat. You can just smack them, get your XP, move on. So they've taken the grind out of grinding to a degree. It does make it extremely faster than normal. The soundtrack is great. It's not as poppy as what Persona 5 was, but it's still absolutely fantastic. I've played 11-ish hours so far, so I'm still very early in.
Yeah.
I think I've done like two of the main quests so far, and I'm having an absolute blast juggling the new archetype system, picking what class each of my players is going to play as, trying to find a balance of team of like magic users, healers, damage dealers, tanks. It has such a great system, and like in previous titles, for Persona, for example, you can inherit skills. So even if you change class, you can still inherit some of the skills from your previous class to bring across. So if you started off as a healer, say, once you swap to tank, you can bring over some of those healing skills so you can be a tank that can also heal, and so on and so forth. Or, you know, you can be a mage and bring across some of the magic skills that – so you can do both, you know, physical damage and magical damage. They also have what's what I'm looking for? It's essentially like team attacks. So depending on what archetypes you have in, you can do like a dual attack with an ally. It does a extra damage, extra or if it's a support action, the boss will last longer or will be stronger and more advantageous to you. So far the game's absolutely stunning. It is weird playing it on PC because I'm not using a controller, so I'm playing with mouse and keyboard, and it's kind of like a point and click adventure, but I just move around with the arrow keys. I actually think I like it more than using a controller. It's been really cool because I can kind of just, instead of like hitting left and right and cycling through the enemies, I can just mouse click on them. Like I want to hit this guy. I want to hit this guy. I want to hit this guy. So there have been some interesting stuff there. The way Steam updates games was annoying. Once I installed the game, it was like an 80 gig download. And then the next day, it's like, hey, there's an update. We're going to re-download the whole 80 gig for some reason and then verify all the files and make sure everything's still all good.
Mm.
So it took like an extra hour and a half to download, repatch the game. And like, that's weird. I don't think Steam's ever done that before.
No, not something that I see all that commonly.
I can definitely see why it is being reviewed so highly.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's sitting at like a 94 Metacretic.
Yeah, it's reviewing it well.
Absolutely stunning. And I think what's helping it is that more serious story.
Mm.
Like it's not a bunch of teenagers fighting their evil teachers. It's that high fantasy political intrigue that I kind of enjoyed about this, like the front end of Final Fantasy 16. It's very Game of Thronesy.
Yeah, and that's certainly what has triggered my interest. And from what I experienced in the prologue, I was like, oh yeah, as you mentioned, political drama is certainly more intriguing to me than what we mentioned it last week. The type of genre within anime that's within like kids and school and stuff. What's it called?
I know what you mean.
That one is. So like, that's not for me. Now, high fantasy isn't always for me either, and I think that would be a barrier to metaphor. But the way it's set up and delivered in such a way, This has definitely piqued my interest, but I'm glad that you're the one checking it out instead of me. I guess one of the big things when we were leading into the launch of this game, Max, you and I were talking, and you kept referring to this game as, I can't believe it's not Persona.
Mm.
Do you think that the history of Atlus as a larger company with Persona, do you think that's going to help or hinder this new IP?
Well, like I said, because it's from Studio Zero, which is, I think they're...
Compared to P Studio, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, so... So Hoshino, who was the director and producer of Persona 5, is now leading Studio Zero.
Yeah.
So you can see where it got its... where it's pulling... where it's pulling its... ideas and inspiration. Thank you, because I think this is technically Studio Zero. This is Studio Second's first original IP. The only other game they worked on was they did the re-release of Catherine Full Body back in
2019. Oh, yeah,
yep. So, for a studio to come out with this as a fresh IP. Although similar to IP they've done in the past, I think is really cool. I think they've nailed it. They've hit it out of the park. And like I said, I'm still early. I mean, I know I've played 11 hours, but that is next to nothing in a JRPG. But you know, all the characters are so, like, I've only met 3 or 4 characters that are kind of allied with me at the moment, and all of them are so interesting. They all have. So far fairly fleshed out backstories. You can see the reason as to why they've joined with me. They all have their, like, although they all have their own agendas, they are all aligned with what I'm trying to do, and it's cool to have that through point of having allies that have similar desires for the world that we're living in.
Excellent. Well, fantastic. I'm sure we'll have more to say next week as you keep going. But this certainly is the beginning of the week of the Max game. We talked about October just being absolute bonkers for you. But the other is Dragon Ball Sparking Zero.
Yeah, Dragon Ball Sparking Zero is great. So shout out to Ben and Emco for providing a code for us playing this. I have been playing it since last weekend. But obviously with the PAX show, we kind of just we were playing and kind of just focused on that. I have now almost finished Goku's entire episode structure. I've dabbled in a few of the others, but I have jumped into the free battles. I've played online with a friend. The connection was a little bit somewhat to be desired. I don't think he has the greatest connection in my opinion, but he'll swear black and blue that he's got the best internet ever.
excuse me.
The game's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It looks good. It doesn't have that weird, like, you know how some IP games just look different when they're gamified. A big one for me being like Sword Art Online doesn't quite hit the same feeling as what the anime does. Whereas here, Dragon Ball looks great. One of the additions that they put in that I really, really enjoy, they're essentially like what if episodes.
Mm.
So if you complete certain battles by meeting certain conditions, it branches off the story and gives like that what-if story. The first one you'll encounter if you play as Goku is Raditz.
Yeah.
If you forego Piccolo's help and just beat the shit out of Raditz by yourself, you get a what-if path. Now, they're not easy to do. So most of those battles are on a time limit to begin with because you're essentially just trying to survive them. But you have to actually beat your opponent within that short time frame to be able to unlock them. But they tell some really cool stories. The Raditz one is the only one I've done so far because I haven't been good enough to actually beat any of the other ones to meet the conditions. Because you have, really little time. I believe it's been patched now, but the difficulty curve of Zaru Vegeta was no joke, like Great Ape Vegeta. I was doing fine until I met him and then proceeded to get my shit kicked in for about 20 minutes. And then the game's like, do you want to just retry and lower the difficulty? Because we can do this. It's fine. Just lower the difficulty. I'm like, nah, I'm stubborn. I'll just keep bashing my head against the wall until I do it. And I eventually got it. But yeah, and I mentioned to the PR rep at Ben, I'm like, hey, that fucking difficulty curve was no joke. He's like, yeah, it's the one complaint that we keep getting from everyone. So I believe it's been patched since then. but yeah, the game looks great. I haven't unlocked everyone yet. I'm still chugging along. It plays exactly like the old, you know, Budokai Tenkaichi games that I loved. Granted, it's a bit different because I played them on Wii, so I got to do all the stupid funky moves to do all the special moves with the Wiimote and stuff. Just that extra tiny little bit of immersion for the lack of visual fidelity on the Wii. But the game's great. How have you been finding? Have you put much time into it yet, or
not as much as you? Definitely, but I have spent time with the title. So, I started the story mode, and I got up to that Rat's Decision. I went with the Piccolo option and I just kept playing. I was like, cool, I'm just going to run through it. Then I messed about in the tutorials, because knowing that it would be quite a bit, having been a real long time since I played the Dragon Balls, especially the Budokai Tenkaichi style games. So I went through all of that, did the basic, the intermediate, didn't touch the advanced because I was like, I just was losing my attention span towards it. But I did go last night. So as with the party was kicking on and it was getting a bit like cold outside, I was like, so Craig and I went inside and started playing. Played a bit of Street Fighter, played a bit of Tekken, and then we ended off with some DBZ. So Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. Excuse me. It was one of those games that we were playing and we really weren't quite sure what the fuck's going on. Like I was feeding him, you know, instructions as we were playing. But it's one of those, it just happened. I'm like, okay. That was cool. I think I won. I did this cool blast thing at you once. That was rad. Rematch? Yeah, sure. So yeah, like it's certainly fine. It does absolutely feel like those old Budokai Tenkaichi games, which makes me very happy. Like I enjoy that because especially 2 and 3 were the most like fun. So I grew up with DBZ. I kind of fell off it. I never really got, you know, experienced it through past on the late Margin Buu saga, I think, which then went to GT and now Super, and I haven't seen either of those things. Excuse me. So yeah, look, I'm certainly enjoying it. I knew it was going to be more for you, but as I'm playing it, I'm remembering, oh yeah, this, oh yeah, that, and that part's fun because it's been a very, very long time since I've sat and watched Dragon Ball Z specifically.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you mentioned like visually it's interesting. The choice that they have made to have the game sprites have that cel shaded look, but the backgrounds be really high rendered is awesome. Because as you mentioned, there's the big challenge that I have with most JRPGs or any sort of anime inspired games, they always look like ass. Because they're attempting to match the art design of the animes with those, you know, soft, simpler colors, with the, you know, thicker outline sort of setup. It doesn't translate. It kind of looks like what Family Guy and Futurama did on when they were released on PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
but this is a great way. So by having the sprites be simple but still very sharp and the world looking lovely, but also a little, like it's one of those things where it looks lovely, but it's done in such a way that you are constantly drawn to the sprites. So the background is seamlessly blends in rather than being a very obvious point of difference between what you're playing and what you're experiencing and what you're seeing. So I'm enjoying that. Like that part is absolutely fantastic. But yeah, it's certainly with this week being spending more time, excuse me, preparing for the party, the get together last night, time of recording, I haven't had a lot of time to spend playing. Most of what time I have had has been with Silent Hill, just because I'm really, really enjoying it. And we will have that review discussion up with Fid soon. Is there any other thing, any else we missed with? Well, probably from a real PlayStation space though, Max. You jumped into the new Astrobot level.
Yeah, I was about to say, I played the new Astrobot speedrun level, constructing speed or building speed.
Yep. How is it?
So they dropped the first of five levels on Thursday night going to Friday. It was midnight for us. So they'll come out at the same time each week for the next 4 weeks. It was cool. My daughter got a kick out of it. Hadley's been playing it a fair bit. She has increased her time from 50-odd seconds to 36 seconds, which is great because my best time is probably 34 seconds.
Nice.
The world record is at 27 seconds, and I have no idea how to shave 7 seconds off my fucking run to even compete. So you play with so it is a construction level. So it has, all the construction stuff that's already in the game. It's got those moving girders. It's the broken glass frames. It's got Barkington, I think, is the name of the fucking dog that sits on your back that rockets you. I think Barkington is what it's called. You have access to that for the entire speedrun level, which is cool. It kind of helps you do skip portions of the level and helps you get through it a bit faster because you can obviously just keep boosting and boosting and boosting every time you land. I've just got to optimize my run to make sure I'm not jumping too high. So as when I boost, I hit the ground. I'm boosting equal to the ground if I'm jumping up a level.
Oh, so you don't get that slow down from the drop?
I don't get the slow down from the drop. I have to reactivate the boost. And I can kind of hit the ground running, so to speak, and then boost again straight away. The level's cool. It's very short. It feels very straightforward, but again, 7 seconds short is what I'm at currently, and there's clearly something that I'm missing. Well, something that I'm doing that I should be missing.
Have any of the additional bots appeared in the update as well?
So you get two bots for finishing the speedrun level. You'll get a Helldiver.
Mm-hmm.
You get one other premium special bot.
And do we know? And that is that one that's already publicly known?
I would imagine so. The level's been out for 4 days now. I just can't remember.
Stellar Blade?
Not the Stellar Blade
one.
Something else.
Is it Killzone? Is it the Hellgast or something? No, they're already in the game. Worth having a look. Max is doing some Googleizing now. I haven't jumped on into it yet myself. I was having a chat with... I was having about a two-hour phone call with my son today, which was awesome. So he and I are going to tackle the time trial this week and see if you can get the best score. I'm intrigued to see how it goes. Seeing as your kid did a pretty good run.
Yeah, it's just sitting at 36 seconds. It's pretty crazy.
Any luck?
Yes, it is. It's from Raza Ronan, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, Master of Samurai, a new hero on the rise. I'm assuming that's Rise of the Ronin.
Yep, makes sense.
Yes. It's on the protagonist, Rise of the Ronin, and you get a Helldiver. So I think each one's going to have a I think each one's going to have a Helldiver and another special bot.
That's a bit poo, but it makes sense. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's everything else. We will have some more reviews in the coming week, though. Max returned the PlayStation VR, so I now have access to it, which is great, which means I will be able to finally tackle Max Mustard. And we also received a code from the team at PlayOn for Arizona Sunshine Remake. So I reached out for that one specifically because Arizona Sunshine is the standout best-selling VR game near every month, right? Yeah, for whatever reason, I've just never messed with it. So when I saw the remake was coming, I was like, oh yeah, I'll wait and I'll check out the remake. And then now it's finally dropped, but I don't have access to it. Pardon me, so I'm keen to experience one of the most well-regarded shooters in VR. So that should be intriguing. But anyway, let's get into this section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Busy week this week, Max?
Really? There's some interesting stuff to talk about. So let's kick off with the big collapse. Sean Layden, ex-PlayStation exec, who held a number of high-profile roles across Sony Interactive Entertainment, believes that there has been a, quote, collapse in creativity across the industry due to, quote, studio consolidation and the high cost of production. Speaking in Singapore at Gamescom Asia, as reported by GamesIndustry.biz, the executive noted that the software used to get greenlit on the basis of whether it's fun or not. Now it's all about how much money a release can earn in its return. Quote, in the past, we spent a lot more time looking at games and not asking what's your monetization scheme or what's your current revenue plan or what's your subscription formula. We asked the simple question, is it fun? Are we having a good time? If you said yes to those questions, you usually get a green light. You don't worry too much about the end piece, for better or for worse. Of course, back then you didn't make a game for millions of dollars, so your risk tolerance was fairly high, end quote. Layden notes that the industry is beholden to its ever-escalating budgets, and that's stifling creativity as a consequence. Quote, today the entry cost of making a AAA game is in the triple-digit millions now. I think naturally risk tolerance drops, and you're looking at sequels, you're looking at copycats, because the finance guys who draw the line say, well, if Fortnite made this money in this amount of time, my Fortnite knockoff can make this in that amount of time. Layden has spoken for quite some time about the need for shorter games developed in quicker timeframes on smaller budgets, but he also noted that middle-tier games, the so-called AA titles, have largely disappeared. Quote, if you can become AAA, you survive. Or if you do something interesting in the indie space, you could also. But AA is gone, and I think that's a threat to the ecosystem, if you will.
Well, that I would agree with, of course. So that with even with us being at PAX this, you know, last weekend, we saw exactly that there is only indies and only AAA. And even the AAAs weren't there. They weren't really showing up, right? So that middle space is absolutely gone. There are a couple in, you know, what some of what Five Star was doing with the, you know, the Sega titles. But even then, they are lower AAA rather than direct AAs.
Yeah.
So to expand on his point of the lack of creativity, yeah, I do believe that to be the case. Not in entirely. Obviously, we're having a lot of creative ideas, and if you want true creativity, spend your time in indie games. But his focus around, you know, people communicating more on the revenue plan, the subscription formula, like that, looking at it as a games of a service rather than just a one-off experience. Layden is definitely from a different generation of developer. And it's interesting for him to make these claims. A, you know, he's no longer within PlayStation, which is fine. He believe he works for Tencent, which, you know, reputable company and all. So curious on that. It was either that or I want to say NetEase, but I don't think it's NetEase. Hey, Sean Layden, where do you work now?
I'll tell you. He's currently Tencent.
Yeah, Tencent. So yeah, he brings up correct points, and I don't disagree with him, but it's, yeah, I feel like it's something that he could have done at a later date. But once again, you can't predict the future entirely. You can try to counter it, but I don't know. Speaking of the future, though, this one, next bit of news, Max. But actually, before I do that, what's your thoughts on this? I just started jumping in.
I mean, it is. Like, he obviously worked in this. He's obviously worked in the space for a long time. And to go from, you know, the selling point of a game of is this fun to now is it going to make back the money that we're going to spend on this, makes sense. It's one of those things of, like, you know, if they are costing, it's that thing of they're costing triple digit millions to make, they're also taking like 7+ years to make. For a studio to survive for 7 years with not having an income stream, but having to pay for an entire studio for 7 years, obviously, like, it seems like a very scary prospect to be like, we have to make sure this bitch is going to sell because otherwise we are fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, back when there were, you know, only $1 million to make instead of hundreds of millions of dollars to make, you had a little bit more leeway of like, hey, we can make the fun game because the fun game doesn't need to sell as many copies to make our money back. as opposed to this. Like, you see games that sell millions of copies and they're like, nah, it didn't really meet our expectations.
It seems to be only a Square Enix problem.
Well, I mean, it's also, to shine some light on an upcoming story, it also seems to be like a Remedy problem because they sold a few million units and they're like, well, we didn't even make our fucking advertising money back.
Well, that's about around Alan Wake too. When it came to Control, they did a good job. So that was a very well-received game. It sold really well, and it was only made for like $25 million or something crazy. So it was like really, really low. So it was interesting this week when when Remedy came out and formally unveiled Project Condor as a co-op-focused FPS set in the Control universe. Titled FBC, which is the Federal Bureau of Control, Firebreak. It's a three-player co-op game where you and your friends team up to complete missions set inside the Federal Bureau of Control, which feature, quote, raging paranatural crises across a variety of unexpected locations, end quote. Excuse me. It is releasing for PS5 at some point in 2025, and it'll be available as part of PS Plus Extra on launch day, which is rad. Quote, dive into the Federal Bureau of Control's unpredictable and extra-dimensional headquarters during its darkest and strangest hours, the PlayStation Store page teases. Quote, as one of the FBC's fearless first responders, you and your team are on call to confront everything from reality-warping anomalies to otherworldly monsters. No matter the odds, will you contain the chaos or finally lose control? End quote. In a press release, Remedy commits to a post-launch support for the title as well. Using your own crisis kit, you'll put together a loadout before a mission containing the usual weapons and tools you'll expect for an FPS. But then also, quote, powerful paranatural augments, which are strange items with very unique powers that can alter the course of the battle, end quote. Remedy sees FBC Firebreak as an opportunity for fans waiting for Control 2 to try something new and get new players on board. Max, you enjoyed Control.
Mm.
Is a multiplayer Control something of interest to you?
Yeah, my only concern being that Remedy has never made a multiplayer title before in their life. I think they're just single-player story games, right?
That is correct. And on top of that, you know, Control, especially on PS4, didn't run all that awesome with one person doing a whole bunch of nonsense. So I do wonder, like, how are they going to put three people in there?
Really cool idea. I like the setting of Control. The FBC was awesome. I think that mixture of, like, reality and paranormal is a really cool idea. Remedy are obviously fusing all their worlds together, which is also awesome. There's a low barrier of entry because it is free on PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, that is an added advantage, and that is something I'm glad to see, because when we talk and we've talked previously about, like, oh, you know, is Remedy the studio that Sony should have acquired? And I think in a lot of ways, yeah. And, you know, with down the line, maybe this is a little testing bed to see how it goes, but also demonstrates either the cost of development for this little interesting idea, Sony's willingness to support a silly little idea, especially to potentially bolster their games as a service initiative rather than making things internally, work with a lot of second party, you know, deals, take some of that larger risk away. Because Remedy, as you mentioned, they made a lot of money back in Control. However, Alan Wake 2 is yet to make, I think it's only just broken even or yet to. Mm. And a lot of that is digital only, Epic exclusive on PC. No physical release, but that is being rectified as in they're releasing a physical version soon. but yeah, hopefully they have a second or a third wave and it comes up okay. Wait and see. I think, is that you next?
It is you next.
Oh.
I've worked as well, so you get the fun end of PlayStation News.
Oh, well, that's exciting for me.
Which is all about you.
So, thanks, man. Team Asobi has confirmed that the previously announced Astrobot speedrun levels will roll out on PS5 on a weekly basis, with the first out now. Building speed debuts in-game, while another level will be available at Thursday at 2 p.m. BST and 6 a.m. PT, that's US time, until midnight for us, until 14th of November. So here's what the full schedule of Astrobot speedrun schedule levels will be. So you get building speed, which is available now. Let us slide on the 24th of October, spring loaded run on the 31st of October, helium heights on the 7th of November, and rising heat on the 14th of November. What do you think about the distribution of this, Max? Why do you think they've done it one a week?
I guess to give people enough time to play them and get the best run they can do, and then to move on to the next one. And I said this to you, I'm a little bummed that they didn't just drop them all at once and go to have fun.
Yeah.
I just like the streaming services have ruined me for the week to week release.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out I get shitty about week to week releases in video games too.
Yeah.
Just let me binge it. Just let me play it.
No, I understand the reasoning. I like it.
Like these guys don't have like retention data to get renewed for season two. Just fucking let me play them all.
Well, no, I get it. So the idea is that if you release one a week, especially those diehards, Astrobot will become the game that they will play for the next week, because they'll spend the entire week trying to run the best time, and they go, okay, oh, the next one? Cool. And then they'll run the next one for the next 7 days.
My other theory is it takes them a week to make these levels.
You'd assume they're already made, right?
No, they're making them once a week.
Damn, that's genuinely impressive if that were true. But I think it's just to stagger out that force a longer time engagement with the game itself. Because once again, we no longer work in, you know, we work in the attention economy. So if a game can hold your interest for a week, make you not play another game within that time, then they've done their job. So hopefully. I would assume, is the idea that they're like, yep, do it for a week, you'll run it, you're the next one, and we get five additional weeks out of Astrobot, where most people have played it, platinumed it, and sent it into the wild by now. Still cool, though. I might just wait and do them all at the same time.
See you later. Next up, we have PlayStation, the concert, the musical. So Sony earlier this week announced that PlayStation The Concert, a world tour of musical pieces taken from some of its biggest and best PlayStation titles. The show includes performances from God of War, The Last of Us, Ghost of Us Tsushima, Horizon, and, quote, many others that reflect our 30 years of making games. Tickets are on sale at the moment, with tour dates across 2025 announced for the UK and Europe. The show will also reach the USA at some point. So far, the concert is announced to be visiting the following countries: England, Scotland, Republic of Ireland, France, Belgium, Germany, Switzerland, Italy, Hungary, Bulgaria, Austria, not Australia, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Poland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and Finland. You can find a list on the blog. Just some of the musicians confirmed to be performing as part of the concert are Gustavo Santaolalla from The Last of Us, Yoraz Daman from Horizon, Ian Ashgeary from Ghost of Tsushima, and Bear McCreary, God of War. The PlayStation blog truly hypes the performance up, quote, with video game music stepping into the global spotlight, PlayStation The Concert is poised to redefine what a music experience can be. This is more than just a show. It's the ultimate video game concert experience, embodying PlayStation's innovative spirit and pushing the limits of what's possible, from your console to stages around the world. Like Final Fantasy haven't been doing these concerts for like 30 years.
Yeah. And maybe this is the idea of, well, we can do that.
I'm super keen. I really hope they come to Australia. I'd love to get tickets. I had a look at the pricing of tickets from like Germany and Ireland and stuff. With conversion, you're probably looking anywhere between like 120 to like $300 Australian.
Yeah, 300 is a bit much, but 120.
Depending on seating. This would be cool. Friend of the show, Joel, he's like, I bet you they only come to one city. And I'm like, yeah, and I bet you it's fucking Sydney.
Yep. And I will make that trip. I would genuinely make that trip. So yeah. For me, I, as a sucker for
anything PlayStation.
For anything PlayStation, that's it's the big given. But then also anything, you know, I do quite like music and soundtracks, and I love a good stage.
I like music.
I like a stage.
I like games. This is great.
I like when a stage and music do things together. It's quite appreciative. It's a good sensory experience. Especially like knowing that like Gustavo and Bear McCreary will be involved. Hell yeah. Like, because that's the thing I was wondering when they were like, oh, you know, it's Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima and God of War. I'm like, you better have the fucking right dudes. Like, unless Last of Us wouldn't feel the same without Gustavo sitting there plucking his guitar being amazing. You know, Bear McCreary has made such a great sound for God of War. However, what I would hope, and I don't see it happening, but what I would hope is that they include Kenneth C.M. Young from Astrobot, get him in there as well. Because they mention, you know, oh, music from the last 30 years of PlayStation, yet they've picked four franchises to promote all within the last 6 years. So are they going to play some PS1 bangs? Like, what's the deal?
Hey, you don't know that it's not God of War PS2.
That's also true. Still doesn't answer my question. Are we getting Ape Escape? Like, are we getting, like, PS1 games? Obviously for me, my PlayStation 1 music is like Harvest Moon. Not going to play that. Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Not going to play it. Need for Speed.
Loco Roco.
Yeah, and like, you know, get Patapon. Get a lovely stage for people to say Patapon. That'd be fun.
It's just someone up there using the guitar minigame from Last of Us 2.
Well, that'd be cool. Just doing, you know, trying to play like, you know, Damn It, but badly. It'd be incredible. But yeah, I'll absolutely be going. I'll find a way. For us, it'll be probably later next year, mid to late next year. But son of a bitch, I'm in because I'm a shameless. And you know what will happen, Max? It'll open. They'll, you know, Bear McCreary will walk out, and you'll get that, you know, from like God of War, and I'll just start crying immediately.
Skyrim was this?
Yeah, that's gonna be amazing.
It'll be the same weekend as like a wrestling show, and you'll be like, damn it.
Yeah, fuck the wrestling.
The decisions.
Yeah, nah, fuck the wrestling. There are decisions that have to be made, Max. Sometimes they're easy, like going to a PlayStation concert instead of going to wrestling, or some of them are a lot harder in terms of maybe you should completely reset the entire production of a show.
Keep going, it's your turn.
Is it?
Yep.
Didn't I just? Oh, it is too. Well, Sony's been doing a good job adapting its flagship franchise into TV shows and movies, as we saw previously with The Last of Us, Twisted Metal, and Gran Turismo, which I still haven't watched. It looked pretty arsehole. But recently, it hit a snag with Netflix's take on Horizon, and now Deadline is reporting that it's been forced to start from scratch with its God of War series that was originally planned for Amazon Prime. According to the site, showrunner Rafe Judkins has quit the project, alongside executive producers Hawk Osby and Mark Fergus. Multiple scripts had been completed, but it's now expected the show will head in a different creative direction. Amazon still values this project highly, and saw plans to work with Sony to hire a new writer's room for the release. Of course, all this means it's probably years away, even further now, and it all needs to recruit fresh personnel and settle on a script before it can even begin to think about casting. What do you think's the issue here, Max?
It could be a number of things, I guess. I mean, if multiple scripts have been completed, but the showrunners and the producers are like, no thank you. Who knows?
Yeah.
In TV, it literally could be anything.
Yeah, like the things that I'm curious about, I'm sitting on a ponder on it, you know, was there some turmoil about how to present Kratos? Is it some turmoil between the balance between Norse mythology and Greek mythology? Are they wanting to exclude one and keep the other? Are they wanting to include both?
Yeah.
Are they having challenges with casting or, you know, having Kratos literally be, you know, this 7-8 foot monster of a dude who's all boy. And like, why don't they just cast Chris Judge? That's cool. That would makes life a whole lot easier. Or just get Triple H. He can't act for shit though. So maybe don't do that.
And he's about half the size.
Yeah, he's not a very big. He looks it, but he's also old.
I have to go like full Lord of the Rings Gandalf, where they put him on a box and everyone else sits on their knees.
Oh, pretty much. He would be having God of stilts. Obviously, I would love to see this, and it disappoints me that we have to wait even longer, but I'd much rather have a good show than not. There's two ways you can look at this, I think, you know, as in the producers and the director were like, nah, we don't like, you know, it's not, you're not following our vision, we're out. Or it could be the other way of going, no, we need this to be fantastic. What you've offered is not good enough. You may leave. You know what I mean? So, like, it could be somewhere in the middle is the way I'm seeing it, right? But wait and see.
Could be these. Like a Dragon, Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii has had its release date moved forward by a week to the 21st of February to avoid Monster Hunter Wilds.
Good call, because February's fucked.
Call of Duty Black Ops 6 preload start tomorrow.
I forgot that game's coming out, because once again, so fucking like, keen it should, it was bizarre, like, it wasn't at PAX. How many, like, up until the last couple of years, we would play near every Call of Duty at PAX. It was awesome. But
sure. Marvel's Spider-Man 2 is coming to PC on the 30th of January next year.
So I woke up and saw that news this morning. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'd be interested to see how that would look on the PCs.
Marvel's Spider-Man 2 will also receive no further story content.
That's bullshit.
The Dunsky.
Well, that bums me out because there was a great Venom. Little... Yeah, where's the Venom?
Whatever they're doing next. Where's the his own game. He doesn't need story content. Fuck
well, off. Then where's the DLC that they're hinting at for Carnage? Where's the DLC they're hinting at the for Venom Chameleon?
Game. He's in the Venom game. Sure, it's all been moved. It's all been moved to the Venom game. I don't know. Fuck if I know.
Do you think the leaks played a role in this?
I called it here first. Yeah. Yes, 100%. Yeah, most likely.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
And according to Tom Henderson, we could be looking at a 10 to 15 hour DLC for Hogwarts Legacy next year. Apparently, it's getting a definitive edition.
Okay, I thought they were making a sequel.
Yeah, they might still make a sequel, but why not get some extra money for a 10 to 15 hour DLC?
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Oh, absolutely. Well, like I said, that could be a little while away, Max. Let's take
fucking Suicide Squad money.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a look at what games are coming out this week in case you don't want to wait that long for the Hogwarts Legacy DLC. Coming this week are Fantasy Friends Dream Worlds coming October 22nd, Kong Survivor Instinct October 22nd, Date Everything October 24th, Flint Treasure of Oblivion October 24th, Puppet House 24th, Romancing Saga 2 Revenge of the Seven October 24th, Barbie Project Friendship woo, October 25th, Call of Duty Black Ops 6 October 25th, Sonic X Shadow Generations on October 25th, and Wise X Nordics October 25th also. I guess Call of Duty.
Project Friendship.
What was it, sorry?
Barbie Project Friendship.
That does sound like the most intriguing one out of all of them, because Sonic, like, I'm...
I don't know. Date Everything also sounds like a banger.
Yeah. Yeah, Date Everything does sound like the one, and not Sonichu. It's definitely not Sonichu. But yeah, I think Call of Duty is the one, because I don't have enough autism to enjoy Sonic, so...
Let's have a look. Oh, Jesus. Look at their website. It's fucking atrocious.
Alright, explain the Date Everything. Well, what have you found?
That's what I'm looking for. I'm trying to find like a... Here we go. Date Everything is a sandbox dating simulator set in the comfort of your own home, featuring 100 fully voice-acted, dateable characters. Let the romance flow between your bed, smoke alarm, and overwhelming sense of existential dread.
Alright, that does sound kind of rad.
Apparently, it doesn't unlock on Steam until February 2025, so I wonder if this...
That may be... I'd assume that's a mistake?
I wonder if this list is fucked. And it was only updated 2 days ago. I feel like if it was going to be delayed, it would have been delayed before then.
Could be. Well, speaking of delay, we don't want to delay any more of this getting the fuck out of here. Big thank you, everyone, for joining us once again. Much appreciated as always. But Max, it's time to go. I'm tired.
You're tired.
I need to go to work.
Don't remind me.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. This PlayStation Conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. Like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures. We watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can by telling your friends, telling your family about this position pod. If you're listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopcultures. As well as our merchandise store, popcultures.com/shop, where you buy shirts and other sorted shit with our logos on it. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players.